And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon are Jonathan Pinton and Emily Thibodeau, who are here to talk about a new journal that they are putting together, a literary journal. It's called Embrasse, and it will be a traditional print journal with some elements online. Jonathan has been in our studios often before talking about literary matters. He is the editor of the online journal Unlikely Stories and has had quite a bit of experience with literary journals and accepting submissions and helping people and editing. And Emily is a graduate of the program here at UL Lafayette in English, creative writing. And then I believe you went off and got your master's someplace.
Did. I went and got my MFA at Columbia in fiction writing.
Well, and congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah.
But you decided to return back to Louisiana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. While over there, I had many peers and classmates who went on to start their own literary journals and for various reasons. And I had always wanted, I had kind of a dream of becoming better at Cajun French because that's my heritage and I'm from here. And I thought, okay, if I go back home, this is something that I really have to do. And I, you know, care about having a literary journal and creative writing. And so that was a big sort of impetus for returning here, being able to do projects like this in an area that I care about and preserving the language in that way.
So. Well, let's talk just a minute about literary journals, because that might interest people. The fact that you said many of your friends were going off and starting literary journals of their own. Is this something that has become more popular? Do people, and again, for those people who are not in that field, they just may not, you know what's out there in that world. Jonathan, can you give us a sense of what that world is like, literary journals, both are online or traditional print journals?
Sure. The big change with the online publishing is how little money is involved in starting a literary journal, which really broadened the variety and scope of them available. And then, excuse me, with POD, you know, printing on demand.
Mm-hmm.
And modern kind of laser printer methods where a laser printer can look really just about as nice as a regular book, that reduced the cost of print journals as well. So anyone with enough, almost anyone with enough determination and enough drive and a real belief in their mission and their aesthetic, because it takes a lot of energy for very little pay to run a literary journal. So anyone who's got that kind of drive and that kind of belief in what they're doing can start a literary journal, so they do.
Mm-hmm. So pay on demand means that you don't have to have a huge base of subscribers immediately in order to be able to print. You don't have to know you're printing out 5,000 copies of this journal. You can do it on demand.
That's right. I mean, you could start with 50. Mm-hmm. Embrasse is going to have, you know, start with a lot more copies than that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you could start a journal with 50 copies. So the price barrier has really shrunk.
So does this allow people also to create more niche literary journals? You know, I think the ones that we've known about in the past, they just seem to be much more general, you know, the Southern Review and mm-hmm. other journals had more of a general focus. But what you're talking about, and for example, your online journal,
sure,
Jonathan, has a much more focused angle to it. Is that true?
I think so. I think it becomes a lot more democratic in that way. If it's people have the interest and they're able to start it in a grassroots kind of way or have a small community and are invested in that sort of thing, then it becomes something, I think, a little bit more viable and people are interested and they want to support it and be involved. So I think, yeah, I would say so.
Certainly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Unlikely Stories is a very specific thing. When we've been running for, you know, 15 years and it's got its very steady fan base that, you know, we'll never grow to the size of the bigger literary journals, and there's no reason for it to. Of course, Embrasse is very linguistically specific, although we think a lot of people will be interested in reading it. You know, the type of writers that we're looking for are people who are from backgrounds of French extraction without being in France. So it's a very, very specific kind of thing, and I don't – one that probably wouldn't have existed a few years ago, and one I think that really will produce something valuable for the historical record.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you choose the name? Embrasse, I mean, obviously it has that sound of to embrace,
mm-hmm.
but
so,
it has other connotations.
It does. I wanted a word that had an English cognate like that, to embrace, but in French it also means to kiss or to actually make out and things like that. So the idea is the same, to hug, to embrace all the distinct regional varieties of French that exist that are not necessarily highlighted or linked together in a way like this through creative expression through creative writing. So that was the idea behind the name.
Well, and give us a sense of the scope of what you're talking about. Are you talking about worldwide Francophone communities?
We're hoping all across
the world?
We're hoping so. For this first issue, it's focusing on Louisiana French, which involves varieties of Cajun, Creole, and French as spoken by Native Americans here. But we're hoping that if this issue goes well and we're able to continue to focus on international French, whether it's in places like Haiti, French-speaking Canada, the Maghreb, places like that. So it would be international in scope.
We have guest editors who are already interested, one who's interested in working on a Native American issue that would cover the U.S. and Canada, another one who's interested in working on French-spoken in Switzerland. And, you know, we'll be looking for other people to help us with other regions as well. It's just the exploring all the varieties, you know, that are spoken outside of France.
So you're imagining that each issue would come from a different part of the world or a different dialect of French or a different cultural strain of French.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. So your first one will come out next spring. I believe you're hoping in the springtime.
Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras time.
Mardi Gras release date.
And it will focus on the French of Louisiana, the many different varieties of French in Louisiana.
Yes.
Well, you're in need of both people to submit to this journal and also people interested in translating, because you're hoping to have both the English and the French version of the work in your magazine.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking for.
Now, are you hoping that people will submit works in English that will be translated into French and some who will submit French translated into English? Either way,
we're hoping for both. And with some people who I've already received submissions from, they have taken it upon themselves to do their own translating work. Sometimes, if they're capable of that, I definitely would encourage a bilingual translation and submission from people.
And obviously a translation by the writer themselves gives, I guess, a more accurate
I think it cuts down on any sort of stress between discrepancies between.
It definitely cuts down on stress and makes our job easier as the editorial board. But on the other hand, just to draw an analogy, I don't hear Bob Dylan complaining about Jimi Hendrix's translation of All Along the Watchtower. I mean, you can get really beautiful things from an outside translator.
That's true.
Almost becomes another work of art. So as we're talking, keep that in mind. You're looking for people to both submit and those people who could translate into French. And particularly for this issue, I guess people who are very interested in translating into the dialects of Louisiana French.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Whether it is Creole, Cajun, and there are others as well.
There's a lot of variation even amongst Cajun or Creole.
That's right.
Like that.
If you live in Ville Platte or you live down in Pierre Part.
And it's not a problem, though, because I want it to be representative of that thing. And for there to be kind of a local or community effort to translate the French that is spoken here in the kind of in its all its variation.
Right. And we want to say that Rosalind Spencer has just joined us in the KRVS studios. And if you have just tuned in, my guests are Rosalind Spencer, Emily Thibodeau, and Jonathan Pinton. They are here talking about Embrassé, which is a new literary journal, which will have its first issue in the spring. It will focus on works from Louisiana, and the journal is a journal of translation, both French to English and English to French, and Embrassé is the name. So, Rosalind, how did you get involved in this project?
Hi. Actually, I happened to meet Jonathan while working on 100,000 Poets for Change, and we kept running into each other. Sorry. And I also ran into Emily Thibodeau while working on a steampunk festival with Jonathan Pinton. So it's a very small world. So I was very interested in the project because, once again, with my previous work with Festival Words and with Instead, I enjoy the fact that we have such a rich culture in this area, and I believe that we should preserve it at all costs, because that is what makes us different and unique, where every other place you go to is a little homogenized with bright lights. But it's literally the culture and the age that permeates this area that makes us so unique and special.
Do you speak French?
No. I laugh because I didn't realize that I would hear Creole French where I was from in central Louisiana in Bunky. Mm-hmm. because the older ladies would speak it to each other. But when I got older, that's when I started realizing.
Yeah. And so the sound of it is in your head.
Yes.
And the rhythm of it.
And especially since working in Grand Coteau and that region, you hear so much of it shared amongst grandmothers and daughters. And the kids even say words that they don't even realize is rooted in tradition and in Creole and Cajun French.
Now, you're a poet. You're a spoken word poet, and you also teach poetry to kids. Do you find that any of your work has been influenced by those rhythms? Do you hear it in your poetry?
Yes. Actually, I was speaking one day with Patrice Malnick, who's over Festival Words, and she was remarking on how when I write, it seems as if I write in a rhythm or in a way as if spoken word, even though it may be more literary, it still has a certain rhythm. And I do, I enjoy rhythm because as a kid I was influenced by jazz and jazz poetry. So later when I would hear the language and the way people talk down here, I do. I enjoy that very much.
Because that's a very interesting part of the poetry is not only the imagery and the specific words you use, but that rhythm as well. That's so interesting. And that's a very important part of translation, which is what we're also talking about. So Embrasse, a literary journal that will, for the first issue, focus on Louisiana. And after that, it will take us around the world to different Francophone communities. And Louisiana does have so many connections with those different communities, people visiting here. And I know particularly with young people in this area, that becomes more and more important to feel like you're reaching out to those cousins, those Francophone cousins around the world. Well, Emily, when you were doing your master's in Columbia and beginning to develop your ideas about what you wanted to do with writing and perhaps starting a journal, did you find people had preconceptions or images of Louisiana?
It was interesting, yes, because well, first of all, everyone thought I was from New Orleans, and I was advised to say yes, you know, yes, I'm from New Orleans, because, you know, that's the mystique, right? Everybody wants to visit New Orleans, who's from up north. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting to kind of explode that in writing workshop, because I was writing stories and working on a novel set in Acadiana and set in a small Cajun town. And so I became the Cajun ambassador, and I was more Cajun than I had ever been in my whole life. And I realized how many stories passed down from grandmother and kind of people in my family had French in them, and it's a part of expressions and a part of even expletives, you know, that are already in my vocabulary. And so it was interesting to kind of explain that to other people, and in doing so, it made me really think about what it was that I was doing besides just creating art and writing stories and fiction, but what it is that I was doing by including the French in my work. And so I thought that this would be an even more direct way to work on that. But yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. You know, I found myself all of a sudden explaining phrases like "gade dans" to a class of Columbia, you know, graduate students. And it was great. And I was glad to be there and to be able to do that and to kind of open people's eyes to our region in that way.
Right, sort of explicate the subtlety of the differences in South Louisiana. It's true, when we live in a place, and particularly if we've grown up there, you know, the water we drink, the air we breathe, we think that's just water and air, but it isn't. You know, when you go someplace else and you begin to realize your uniqueness.
That's true.
So you found yourself writing more about Louisiana once you were away? Or?
Well, I've always written about family, and I've found it really hard to get away from telling family stories over and over again, which it lends itself to writing about Louisiana because it's set here and it's based here and saturated with Cajun French. And so that's what I was doing. But in addition to that, or rather without me even having that intention, that's what I was doing there as well, talking about French and speaking about how it really comes from a lack of communication between me and the older members of my family, having a great-grandmother who was 100 years old and who didn't speak English at all. And I had done a project while here for my Cajun French class with Deborah Clifton, interviewed my 100-year-old great-grandmother, and I could understand her, but she could not understand anything that I was trying to tell her in French. Mm-hmm. And so it's always been – that's always been kind of a central kind of longing, I guess, and it's very personal. But outside of anything kind of grand, you know, that's what made me want to do it as well. Well, stories, family,
but focusing
wanting to
on,
belong and communicate. Yeah.
Yeah. Focusing on those stories does make it grand, though. I mean, that is, you know, by telling your own particular story, it does become universal. Well, so Rosalind and Emily, both growing up here, different parts of Louisiana, getting the rhythms of the language and the stories of their families. Now, Jonathan, you're not from here.
I'm not.
You're not.
I was raised in Atlanta.
And how long have you been in Louisiana?
About 3 years.
About 3 years. Mm-hmm. What has your... You're helping them with this journal that is a journal of English and French. Mm-hmm. And for this, particularly this first edition, will be about Louisiana. What is your experience of the Francophone and the French in Louisiana? How has that affected you, or what has your response been to it, these stories that they're talking about?
You know, one of the really amazing things about this area is the warmth of it. And Atlanta's not a cold place, and I lived in El Paso for a long time, which is also not a cold place. I mean, you know, these are warm southern places, but I'm specifically culturally, where I was going with that. They are brutally hot, more environmentally less so than warm, but it's just a wonderful warm culture. And the infusion of music and the acceptance of music in the ordinary life. One does not go hear music here in the same way one does in other places in America. One goes across the street. You know, one expects to hear music all the time. When jams, I mean, certainly jams exist and throughout the United States or throughout the world, but there's kind of a continuous feeling that you're in a jam here that's missing in the rest of the country.
It's interesting, a continual feeling of being in a jam. And not in a bad way, not a, you know, pickle.
You could just ride down the street and hear somebody playing the fiddle outside.
Right. Absolutely.
It's pretty magical.
Or even when you hear people talking, certain rhythms of speech just sound like music as well. So that's – well, and I think everyone would agree on that. And what I'm finding interesting, though, about what you all are talking about with trying to incorporate these rhythms with these stories into a literary journal is one of the things that's always interested me about Louisiana is that everyone talks about what amazing stories we have here. But I have to say we haven't had that group of incredible, famous authors like some of our other southern states, you know, just next door, like Mississippi, when you think of Faulkner and you think of Eudora Welty, those people winning the Pulitzer, those people winning the Nobel. And it's always interested me. And I find these – it makes me so happy to know of these efforts that people are making now. And what's your take on that, Jonathan? I mean, just coming into an area where it's rich in stories, rich in rhythms, but maybe hasn't yet caught up with – the quality of its content?
Well, I think that that's one of the wonderful things about the democratization of literature caused by the way that the internet and POD publishing has made a small journal so much cheaper to run. I think that there's always going to be a perception of American literature coming from New York. I mean, certainly you have, you know, Faulkner and
he's just next door.
he's just next door. And back in Georgia, there was Flannery O'Connor. Right, you know, of course, they exist. But that said, even with a city as notorious as New Orleans, I guarantee you we all know the names of more streets in New York than anyone in New York knows the names of streets in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Literature comes from New York. I mean, there's still that perception. Mm-hmm. I think that's the great thing about what the web has done and what POD Publishing has done to make – literature something that can be produced in Louisiana, that can be effectively produced in Louisiana and can be distributed, you know, worldwide effectively from Louisiana, and gives other areas just a greater opportunity to share these stories and to share them as literature and to perceive themselves as literary people rather than just storytellers. Right. Not that storytellers is less than literary people, but that both can be done here.
No, but it does feed what we think of as a more formal, cohesive literature. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that is the aspect of this journal is not just to remain with the stories here, but to connect them with those Francophone communities around the world that have both influenced us and obviously influence others, whether it's through mythology or just exoticism. We've had an effect on those other people. So how do you see that evolving with this journal?
It's kind of exciting already. Someone who I met at the Blue Moon who was visiting Louisiana, who's from Acadie, from New Brunswick, Lucie Benoit. I've met her one time, and we correspond in French all the time on Facebook chat, and she helps me correct and translate all of the press things for Embrasse and the call for submissions, and it's our, and we're both so enthusiastic about it. And, you know, I think there's something really special about connecting in that way based on the common kind of language and understanding, and especially amongst young people, I'm finding there's a really great enthusiasm. So I'm hoping that it'll be kind of an effort that helps preserve varieties of French. And I think it'll take an effort not just from people only already established writers, but from up and coming people as well. So I'm hoping it'll highlight people like that as well.
Right. And Rosalind, how do you see it evolving?
For myself, I see the journal as a connection, and I think of it more of as a broad terms, and you're right about the whole literary aspect with the South, but what's so unique about the South is, for example, I went to Chicago a few years ago, and there were so many images of Southern culture, especially Louisiana, that I could see, whether it was the food, certain words said, and we forget that so many people migrated from the South and went to the North, and we have so many roots. So I see the journal as a connection, you know, showing that these are the roots that we have throughout not only all of the United States, but throughout the world, and that people do recognize the South, especially Louisiana. And I happen to meet a lot of people working with different nonprofits, and even at the library, I run into people from Africa and France, and they say, I always wanted to come and visit Louisiana. And, you know, it takes you by surprise because you're like, okay, you are halfway in around the world. You want to come here. And they're like, I've always wanted to come. I wanted to see our sister country. And they call it sister. And they feel a connection with the people here because they feel that they're more warm and they're more open. And it has the French. And they have so many things that still remind them of home and give them a sense of comfort. So
that makes me think, too, that something that I would like for this, being that I'm not a translator myself, but I'm hoping that this can be a resource for learning as well as a cultural archive and an archive of creative writing. But, you know, for my own kind of French here, if we have side-by-side translations, it could be like that. And also for other people who are interested, and if I'm interested in learning the French from another region that we're going to cover in the journal, it would be such a great resource, and I'm hoping it could work that way as well.
Right, and I'm just thinking, too, when you're talking about going to Chicago and meeting people who have roots in Louisiana, obviously in California there are many, many groups of Creoles who moved to California.
Yeah, I heard they are all, a lot of them settled in North Carolina. I mean, not North Carolina, I'm sorry, North California.
Yes.
In the wine country. And I have a friend and her aunt, you know, and I see all of this Creole and Cajun stuff. And I was like, wait, but isn't that Northern California? So,
Los Angeles.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's a whole community.
I had no idea.
That's right. Well, and Ernest Gaines obviously lived out there for many, many years. His mother had moved out there. But I could imagine that it would be wonderful to get, and it might be English submissions from Creole communities, say in Chicago or California, and to have those stories then translated in your journal into a Creole French. So many opportunities, as Emily said, for learning just about the language in addition to the culture.
We do encourage people outside of Louisiana to submit on the subject of Louisiana.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
That would be, I mean, a totally viable thing.
Yes. Yeah. You know, even if they can't speak French or write in French themselves, they certainly have those stories and those French connections in their past. And as you mentioned, you are looking for translators, and you mean translators who can translate into Cajun French, Creole French, Native American French. So anyone listening who has those skills or interest could certainly be in contact with you as well.
Yes.
In addition to those who just simply want to write and submit their works. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about a new literary journal called Embrasse. Its cœur, its heart, is here in Louisiana with Emily Thibodeau, Rosalind Spencer, and Jonathan Pinton, who is helping them out with all organizational and business aspects, having been the editor of an online literary journal for many, many years himself. And embrasse, of course, meaning several things in French, but to embrace, to kiss,
to hug.
To reach out and connect with other people. So how will people be able to submit their works? What's the best way to do that? that? Jonathan?
Maybe? Email. Okay. Yeah, our website gives pretty specific, you know, instructions and the email address. Certainly, if they need to submit a snail mail manuscript, we do have the P.O. box there on the website as well.
And what is the website, say it again?
Kerrpublishing.com. And, you know, you'll find Ambrasse from there, or you can just go kerrpublishing.com/Ambrasse.
And cœur as in heart in French.
Heart in French.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So you can search for that online, email, find out more. But what are the deadlines for submissions? You're hoping to get out the first edition by Mardi Gras?
Mm-hmm. Yes. The end of September.
Okay, end of September. And we've been talking generally about literature. Are you accepting all forms of literature? Poetry? What are you accepting?
Mm-hmm. We're doing fiction, creative nonfiction. We're doing poetry. We'd also like to do plays and screenplays, which a lot of literary journals don't do, but we really thought the translation aspects for plays and screenplays would offer us a level, you know, that was really worth pursuing, even though they take up a lot of space. We really thought it could be something very interesting doing that. And we're also looking for literary criticism.
All right. So all of those genres of literature and anyone who feels that they can offer translation skills in any of the Louisiana dialects of French would be very welcome.
Love to hear from
also.
You.
Also, yes. So are you all submitting things to the first edition?
There's an idea.
Don't look modest about that. Well, now you say it's print. So are you going to be including art as well? Is that part of the journal right now? No, just the written word. Okay, just the written word at this point. Yeah. And we also have to mention that your advisor is somebody that many people had the fortune to meet when she was here as the writer in residence, and that's Ricky Ducournay.
Yes, Ricky Ducournay has been instrumental in my life in so many ways. Personal, literary. I worked with her whenever I was here as a junior and senior getting my B.A. in English, and she was the writer in residence. And was lucky enough to meet with her at her home and have kind of one-on-one workshops. Mm-hmm. And so I've been checking in with her various stages. And when I brought this idea to her, she had so many wonderful ideas about it. I had never thought of it as international in scope. Ricky is fluent in French. She's lived in the south of France and is translated into French and studied there. And so she has such a connection with that world. And so had a wider scope. And so she is advising this and in contact with her about her ideas and about all of our steps along the way.
Yes, I mean, she's been on the panel for the National Book Awards. Yes. She's also won what is called the Academy Award of Literature.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So an excellent person to have as your advisor.
Wonderful to have her interested in this.
That's right. And when you said she lived in the south of France, I believe she traveled all through North Africa
as well.
And
yes.
So is quite interested in Creole languages of French as well. So wonderful. Ricky Ducournay, again, a writer in residence here at UL a number of years ago and is the advisor for Ambrasse, new literary journal based here in Lafayette. How many pages do you hope to have?
It's going to be a thick one.
It's going to be a thick
one. We're working on it. But it's going to be bilingual.
That was not modest at all, Jonathan. It's going to be a thick one.
Well, you know, I mean, first off, it's an annual. So, and yeah. You know, we're
get it all in.
Yeah, right. We want to you know, get it all in and make it a worthy project for the full year. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's bilingual, but yeah, the cost, you know, printing costs have gone down so much that it really allows us to explore this kind of niche at a full appropriate scale.
All right. So we're all going to look forward to Ambrasse Louisiane that will come out around Mardi Gras time in next year. It's coming up soon. So any submissions by September, if you have questions, you can contact them through email, through Kerr Publishing, mm-hmm. and the journal is called Ambrasse. You could probably search for that as well. My guests are Rosalind Spencer, Emily Thibodeau. Are you called editors of the journal? What are your titles?
Yes.
We're editors, yes.
Okay, you're editors. And Jonathan helping behind the scenes in all ways. Again, the editor of Unlikely Stories, which is an online literary journal as well. Merci beaucoup et bonne chance. On attend le nouveau journal. Merci beaucoup.
Merci. Thank you.